Good evening, everybody, and welcome back once again.
Good evening.
To our first Sunday night bonus stream.
Yep, that's right.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, and we are joined tonight by a friend of mine by the name of Dave Voiles. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So a lot of people are probably wondering, like, what does Dave have to do with Night Trap?
Dave is Night Trap.
Yeah.
No. That would be nice.
So the reason, like, Dave is joining us is because he is developing, like, we explain your Night Trap project really quick.
Okay. Sure. So I took the original source code, which was written in 68K assembly on the Sega CD, and I ported it to HTML5 and JavaScript so that you can play the game inside the browser today.
Yeah, and Tri has that link, so if anybody wants to go ahead and play along with us, they can.
I'll drop that here.
Probably with a higher quality full motion video than what I have.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah, I'm not even sure if the builds are working right now because it's been about a. I took a break over the holidays basically so I can kind of have a life again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure how far. I mean, we'll get into it in a little bit. But yeah, I'm not sure if those builds will work right now. I have two builds up, usually one that I had working all the time and another that I had where I was consistently making changes to every day.
Oh, okay. So you're a big fan of Night Trap then?
Absolutely. I love this game. This was. Oddly enough, probably one of my favorite games ever.
I don't know about oddly enough. I mean, I haven't even seen it. And I know it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. So you're going to be in for a treat then.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen clips here and there, but I've not really seen it played for real.
Yeah. it's pretty great. The big thing about Night Trap with me was I got it the same Christmas as the Sega CD.
Yep. Ah, okay. Was it like 92 for you then?
Yes. It was Christmas 92, and, you know, like, I was like the target, I mean, probably the target age, which is like 13 years old.
Yep.
So, like, it's, you know, it's seemed like a little risque, but it also is, you know, felt like a late night Cinemax kind of horror movie.
Yeah, very B-style horror, right?
Yes. And
you're a little young for that kind of game. But although looking back today, do you think it's nearly as risque as people had originally said
at the time? Compared to what people were acting like, not at all. Like, I think that it was just, you know, like, you know, coming off of Mortal Kombat, and so they needed another game to go after. And just for clarification, we are going to be playing the Redbox version of it, which is the uncensored version.
Sweet. So that's awesome.
They censored a scene that is like the one that, you know, got everybody up in arms, like in later versions. I've never played their later version though.
Yeah, I've never played a censored version either. And you know what it is? I have it on 3DO as well, and I don't think I've ever realized if they censored that scene or not.
I wonder if they did.
Yeah, because I have multiple versions. I have two copies on Sega CD, don't ask me why, and then I have a copy on 32X, which looks much, much cleaner.
Well, the 32X version is censored.
Sorry, not 32X, 3DO.
Okay.
32X is where I ripped all the footage from for the web game.
Okay. Okay, so that's probably, it probably is a censored one then.
I don't think it is. The 32X footage is actually really, really clear. And if you want to get, like, I don't know how technical you guys want to get on this or how clear things are.
Oh, you can
as technical as
you want.
Yeah, I mean, from spending
we might get
six
lost,
months,
but it's fine.
Yeah, from spending, like, 6 months, like, diving into this game, I could tell you the code in and out and the video quality. So, but I've got to give credit to the Facebook group first. There's a Night Trap Facebook group, a private group, about 350 people. They're incredible, and I got so much of this information from those people there. So I got to give credit where it's due. So it's those folks and also Paul Jensen, who is the developer who wrote the tool that allowed me to rip the video from the disc. So,
oh, cool.
That group and Paul were very, very helpful in helping me understand a lot of this. But along the way, what we discovered was the 3DO footage and the 32X footage were nearly identical as far as we could tell in terms of color palette, how many colors could be displayed on screen at once. And I think it was a slightly enhanced frame rate on the 32X, actually. I think it was about 15 frames a second. And the other platforms, it was about 12 or 13. And for reference, right, film is generally 24 frames a second.
Right.
See, I guess I thought it was published by Sega, so I'm surprised to hear about a 3DO version.
Yeah, yeah, and that's like where a lot of confusion came out, even when I first started to work on this side project. And that's all it really is. Like, I just wanted to see, hey, is this possible to remake? I have no intention of selling it or making money. It's just fan side thing.
Well, so they had Sega originally tried to remake it. I mean, not remake it, but they wanted to, like, the original developers wanted to, like they had a Kickstarter. Which I backed, right. But it failed horribly.
Yeah, it just they just weren't ready for it. Right. But some of the original developers still have all the source footage, which is like immaculate and recorded just as it was at that point.
And they showed some of it, and it looks like it's like really good looking, but it's very video-y.
So what you got to see in that video is actually from someone who. Was part of the Facebook group. Mm. That was the 3DO. I think it was the 3DO footage that he ran through a video editing tool, and he ran a video interpolation. So it actually inject additional frames in there artificially.
Okay. Right.
And he cleaned it up quite a bit. So he did a lot of post processing. But the source footage, from what I understand, and I only know this because Rob Fulop, who is one of the producers, had wrote on my blog and said, "Hey, I still have this." He'd love to comment about. I have it all in my closet somewhere, and it's all running simultaneously, all of the feeds. Mm-hmm. But I think they may have been concerned that, hey, if I get my hands on this and say this product does turn into something, you know, the rights weren't very clear.
Right.
But from what I can understand in conversations I've had with different people, it seems that Tom Zito, who is the producer behind Digital Pictures, or one of the heads behind Digital Pictures, that is the studio who created many of these FMV games in the early 90s, actually owns the rights to it. And then someone else told me Hasbro. So I don't know. Neither of those people have contacted me or come out to me. So I'm not too concerned at this point.
You got to stop taking that Night Trap and putting it public, then, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
That's so, I mean, for some reason, I think that, like, Digital Pictures and Hasbro, like that sounds familiar. Like, yep. The Digital Pictures was maybe owned by Hasbro or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Because originally, the whole project was actually started by Hasbro as part of a console that they were working on in the mid to late 90s or 80s. So this is where things got cool. Like, I don't know how much you want me to talk. I don't want to dominate or own this conversation. So
No, please. It's fine. Like, once we kind of get playing, then I focus a little bit more and Try usually talks a bit more.
Perfect.
So it'll be, like, if you have, like, stories and stuff like that, please go
into
it.
Now it's time to get them out.
No, I mean, even while we're playing and everything, like, it's fine. Okay. We cram these 2 hours as full of content as we possibly can.
Oh, we got plenty to talk about. So the original idea behind it was supposed to be created for a Hasbro system. The name kind of slips my mind right now, but originally it was going to be recorded for VHS cassettes, and what happened, these cassettes were going to be on one tape, and it was going to have simultaneous feeds. You kind of skip between the feeds
on
and quickly fast forward and rewind. And I didn't understand how this really worked until I actually sat down with one of the gentlemen who recorded all of this footage. So mm-hmm. As I started to scrap together this project, I always tell people, share with the world what you're working on. So I kind of made it as a quick prototype during a lunch break one day to say, what can I make in 45 minutes? Ripped the footage, wrote some code really fast, threw it on a website, and I had a rough working prototype. And Engadget and IGN and a whole bunch of sites picked up on it. And sure enough, one of the people who had worked on this and actually filmed the original footage reached out to me on Twitter and said, hey, I saw this article on Engadget a few hours ago that you're working on this project. I've recorded this, and I actually used to work at Microsoft as well, which is where I work now. So it was interesting to see, like, how these worlds kind of collided on this mm-hmm. whole thing. And he said, well, look, I live in Seattle. If you're ever out here, let me know, and we'll grab lunch and talk about it. And I said, sure enough, I'm actually working in Seattle in 2 weeks. I'm going there for PAX. That's the Penny Arcade Expo. And he said, perfect, let's go have breakfast. So we met up one morning, had breakfast, and he just kind of spilled the beans about how the game came together, what this Hasbro project was like, things they've worked on since. And it was really, really insightful to hear about this project. And I guess the coolest part was being a huge fan of this game and of Digital Pictures and FMV games as a whole, and having someone, a member of that staff, come out and reach out to me and kind of fill me in on all these holes that the internet just didn't know about.
Right. And it's, you know, it's very rare, I think. Well, I guess more and more fans of the genre are coming out now. Because time, it was kind of like, oh, man, Sega CD, so much potential is being wasted.
Yep.
But, I mean, it was a lot of fun. I mean, not all of them were good. Most of them were, not very good.
Yeah, I was playing several of them a couple of hours ago, like Tomcat Alley, and it just...
Which did do full-screen, full-motion video on the Genesis, which was
like extremely rare. Yes, I'm glad you pointed that out.
I'm going to drop the link in the chat again for anyone who showed up later.
Yeah.
Someone says 3DO of Night Trap. Oh, the Hasbro system, yes, it was called Nemo. Oh, it's from Tyler Hogel, I believe his name is. He's in the chat right now, but he's one of the members of the Facebook group.
Oh.
So yeah, the Hasbro system was called Nemo. N-E-M-O. But really cool. And actually, you can find a video on YouTube of them discussing the creation of this footage and of the system as a whole. And it's actually an extra at the end of Night Trap. If you insert a code quickly as the credits are rolling, you can see some of this footage. Or
really?
On YouTube, or on YouTube, it's available now. It's just as grainy as you'd expect it would be, but it's there to view nonetheless.
I'm going to go ahead and start, so we can just go.
All right.
So, Dave, you can tell me where I need to be when I need to get the access codes.
Okay. So,
as we kind of go along. I'm just talking about like when the color of the access code changes.
Yeah. So I'm very familiar with the first 5 minutes or so here, because that was the prototype I was building. Was if I can get the first 5 minutes working, the rest of the game just works. Definitely have this part down pat. But
I have the audio coming through to you guys. Since Troy's never played it or anything like that, I kind of wanted him to be able to hear it.
Yep.
So, perfect. Let's see how it goes. Yeah, so, if it's too loud
so
it's or anything.
Low, a little bit.
Yeah, when you were testing earlier, it didn't seem too loud. So.
Do you want to explain what the access codes are or the gist behind this?
Or, oh, it'll explain it.
Are you
going to
watch the opening?
I'll watch the opening and let it reset.
Perfect. Cool.
But I mean, we'll just talk through it. You know, like people will be able to kind of. Like, it. People will be able to hear the audio too.
Yeah.
The thing I always liked about this beginning, though, is that they shot two versions of this. They shot a generic version.
Several versions, actually.
With different console...
I want to hear what you have to say about it. Yeah, console specific, largely gauged around the gamepad they were using.
I love how it's got the on-screen titles, you know, just like, it's very movie-like.
Oh, it is a movie.
They're definitely playing that up.
And that gentleman, James Bill Jones, who you'll see in just a moment here. He is actually in that Facebook group too. So some of the cast.
That's amazing.
Kind of pop in. Yeah, it's cool. That's him right there.
Right now. But you can tell kind of where they make the cuts for this console specific versions.
Your mission? Yeah, definitely.
Protect those girls from whatever happened to the last ones. Now listen up. Last night one of our agents got into the house and found some kind of weird security system.
The interesting thing about this is that actually the game is happening already.
Our agent spliced
behind this.
So there's actually eight cameras running simultaneously, and you are just in your own little thing, kind of getting the gist of what's happening in the game. So if you jump in right now, you'll actually be in a minute. Yeah, so there you go.
Controller.
So, right, that was the clip that they can insert to the different formats, right? So for DOS and Mac, it looks different. For 3DO, it looks different. And they actually went back and reshot that months later. Because this whole game was shot over 2 weeks in August of 1987. And then for the reshoots, they would happen years and years later. Because 3DO, right, wasn't even a thing until 93. So like November of 93, I think it was released. But if you shot the game 6 years earlier, well, yeah, so they basically shot it for the Hasbro Nemo. didn't do anything with it because the technology just didn't get to where it needed to be. So it kind of sat on the shelf, which is why a lot of this will often look older than what would have been late 92 when it was released.
Which is works in its favor, for sure, I think.
So why do we have this, you know, big team of commandos or whatever watching what's going on? Are they tracking these things?
Yeah, so there's these like things called augers, but they don't really know what the deal is with them. There's something like funny going on with the house.
Okay.
It's...
So they already know that something's going on at the house. They didn't like try to warn people?
No. Well, so what they did was they injected Dana Plateau as their undercover agent.
I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna actually start the game.
Go ahead.
But no, you go. Yeah. You can.
So, right, Dana Plateau from Different Strokes will be your kind of guide through this. So she's infiltrated as a young woman who's met up with all these girls at the shopping mall, who met this other young woman who lives at this house.
Not working.
Uh-oh, there we go. So here's the game actually starting.
I know. So oh man. Access. Do I have to hold down the...
No, just hit A. Just A.
No, no. I mean, I have a six button. I wonder if I needed to hold down the mode button to get it to work. I mean, I C works.
So. Yeah, C should change traps.
Yeah.
B should trigger the trap, and A changes cameras.
Right, I can't even change cameras. I can pause it. I wonder...
Do you have a controller extension? My controller extension is very flaky.
Yeah.
Like, I have to, like, reconnect it, sort of, every once in a while.
All right, let me check that real quick.
Like... it has to be, like, really secure connection.
Yeah, you're actually. So what's interesting is it looks really clear on this screen, but I'm assuming that's because you're running it through the FrameMeister and then into here, so it's all upconverted properly,
yeah,
scaled properly.
And you know, I mean, it's arguable that FrameMeister and all doesn't really help.
Yeah, well, definitely
touch stuff, especially because it's so dithered. And,
yeah,
you know, I kind of like dithering. I don't know. I think there's a certain appeal to the dithered aesthetic.
Definitely.
But a lot of people, you know, swear that, you know, okay, you got to have the blurry blending colors for it. But, you know.
So here's what's interesting is those augers went from the bedroom into that bathroom. And if you miss them, they'll actually go into hall two.
Yeah, so you have multiple chances to catch some of them.
Is this all running in real time?
Yes.
Yes.
That is cool.
Yes, and it is extremely technically challenging. I had to like look up patents on LinkedIn after this to figure out how they actually did it. So you can catch someone in just a moment. No, actually, this one you can't. Yep, go in the bedroom. And in a moment, you'll see that meter slide up. And when it turns red, no, you're good. You're good. Go back.
Yeah, no, there's a 30-second delay in what you're saying.
Oh, that's right. I remembered.
Yeah, so. it's not easy.
So I'm playing. That's why like it's hard to.
Yes.
We're gonna miss a whole bunch of stuff it's because I had two controller extensions.
You're gonna have to play through this a couple times, but that's all right. So I suppose it's what's interesting. So I guess the fact that there's all this information happening at once, right? And you can dynamically switch between the scenes, It encourages multiple playthroughs because you might watch just one room where there's a large or long conversation going on, and you don't know whether or not there's a conversation happening in other rooms, like this in the hallway that you're watching.
You can usually tell if there's going to be something happening because the load time is slightly longer switching cameras.
Exactly. It's like a little cheat.
But it's very easy to get caught up in the story, like of what's happening with the girls, and like, I mean, at least for the first half of the game before like they know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. So you have an opportunity to catch someone in the hallway here, or entryway, actually, they call it. So people have actually gone by and made a movie out of this. They've kind of clipped different pieces together. It's about 32 minutes total. And there's obviously different versions because you'd be watching different rooms. But it encourages multiple playthroughs. And I've probably played through this well over 100 times now. I've played to like at least 50 times as a kid. Because before there was GameFAQs, how else was I going to get a perfect? Right? I just had to play it, write down which room, and then timestamp when you could catch people in.
Yep.
See, I can definitely see the appeal of that, and you know, figuring out like what happens at what time and all the concurrent timelines. And
it's like a big puzzle, right?
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, from a distance, this footage actually looks really clear, especially when you consider how limited the color palette of the Sega Genesis was.
It's actually a lot smoother than I expected, too.
Yeah. And for the console or hardware came out in 1989, and to think that you're able to get full motion video out of that, like, that's crazy.
I forgot that. The access code was wrong. I'm just like messing up left and right here.
So right there,
they're coming down the stairs.
Oh yeah, you're right. You did change it.
But I missed it.
Yeah, green is the default. Little brother Danny. So yeah, in the stairs you have an option to catch them.
Like, but, I mean, I can't really see what they are other than guys dressed in black walking funny. Like, do they?
Pretty
have,
much. That's
they
that
kind of look like
are.
Vampire ninjas, I suppose.
Yeah, they have like stockings pulled over their heads. Kind of. Right. You can kind of see through them a little bit.
Ooh, 80s hair. Look at that. So that's Dana Plateau. She is your undercover agent for all intents and purposes. And she'll essentially break the fourth wall throughout the game and stare straight into the camera and speak with you. So you have no control over panning or zooming of the cameras. It just kind of is what it is. But you can trigger the traps as events in each room.
Yeah. They're called, the enemies are called augers. And they have, like, the best theme music ever.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so, just, like, this guitar kind of, like, just kind of guitar riffs.
So what's the, I mean, is there a penalty for just, I mean, I guess each trap can only be sprung once or?
No,
or
you can, every room has a trap. Or right. Multiple sometimes.
I mean, I guess.
The game ends
I guess
if
I'm
you
just...
don't, like, if you miss too many.
I
and then
I'm
later on, people will die.
Like, what's the downside to just triggering the trap at the wrong time?
Oh, you can't trigger it unless they. Kind of like green that bar there. Yeah. That kind of goes up, and when it gets into the red, that means there's somebody over the trap, and you can spring it. You can't spring it when there's nothing going on.
Okay,
can catch like the girls at one point. I think like at different points or at the very end of the game, you can.
Yep. And actually, like, yeah, later on it gets really confusing because there are opportunities where you can catch, we'll say, good or benevolent characters, and there are opportunities where if you do catch certain people, it will work against you. So, again, it's one of those things that encourages multiple playthroughs because you're like, wait, did I catch the wrong person there? Or
So, I mean, how complex is this in terms of branching outcomes? I mean, is it significantly ahead of its time?
Oh, absolutely. It's not so much that it's like choose your own adventure because you'll largely get the end result, but there's key points or key traps throughout the game where if you miss something, the game will certainly end for you in the very near future.
I just missed the code change. I heard her say it starts to say code. Change the code to
yeah, it's the entryway when they're walking out. No. Watching the replay. I'm watching the delay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, at about the 5:30 mark, she'll go and she'll tell Tony and who's her nephew and her son, "Hey, we got to change the password."
Oh, do you have two chances to hear it?
No, in the kitchen, she just says, "Hey, we're going to change it." In the entryway, right after, she's going
to
do it.
Oh, I just heard her say to Red. Okay. Good hunting.
Yeah, so she's talking to Tony and her other son. So the Tony, the guy in the yellow, is actually also in the Facebook group. He does something with UFC, like he's a fight promoter or something now, and I think he lives in Virginia or DC or something.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, it's cool to see all this. Yeah,
this
so there
is
you
kind
go.
Of something that like would be so much fun to do, like a full episode of the My Life in Gaming on, like with if we could like interview people, that would be incredible.
And there's so much to cover here. I guess like what intrigued me about all this was I first saw this at my cousin John's house, 1992. It was his 16th birthday. I was 6 at the time. And I remember seeing him get a Sega CD and Sewer Shark, and I was blown away. Because before that, right, that was the same year that Sonic 2 had just come out. So Sonic 2 looked awesome. But when you see this, you're like, wait, this is a game? Holy cow.
I gotta stay for the theme song, even though I'm going to lose anyways.
Definitely. So here we go. The girls are having a little dance party inside the living room.
And they say, we've got telephones, a car, and your parents are gone. What are we going to do? And everyone's like, party.
Yeah, and they're like,
we've got telephones,
and we have tape players with.
Rocking out on the tennis racket.
Yep. Yeah,
and watch. So Danny goes to leave right here, and he's going to the kitchen. And you kind of actually through the kitchen and into the hallway. So you can kind of track people if you know the layout. And if you had started at any point, you can see the layout and see, you know, what the map looks like and how this whole building works. But yeah, I mean, there's just a lot going on, and this was just so far ahead of its time when you kind of consider this. But like you mentioned before about Tomcat Alley, it was actually full screen FMV where this was a very small part of the screen. And when you consider, you know, the console and the platform it was on and what it was designed for, this is incredibly technically challenging. So in looking at the patents on how they did this with other full motion video games from the developers, Digital Pictures, I was like blown away at how technical it was, because they're using a language that we don't really use anymore. And there's just a lot going on there. And they were really the first to do this. So, you know, kind of breaking these barriers for what would be full motion video games the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. It was, I mean, pretty much only on the Sega CD. Well, I mean, and the 3DS.
Some of these games were ported. Yeah, I mean, also a lot of... So full motion video... I mean, full motion. Digital Pictures was really the studio who had led a lot of this, based out of the Bay Area. And they would make games like Quarterback Attack, Double Switch, which I also have on Sega CD and on the Saturn. But they'd also be ported to Mac and DOS. I think DOS is another really popular platform for this. And they brought over there. So a lot of these games exist on the Saturn just as well, but with a much, much cleaner footage because the Saturn had more RAM, larger color palette, and it could just draw a far better screen. From what I've just seen, the place is being overrun.
You've missed way too many of those sucks. There, I just died.
Yeah, right. So you notice there it says possible 43, captured 4. So what happens is there's some arbitrary number there where if it goes too far into possible and not enough in captured, they'll pull the plug on you and say, hey, man, this place is crawling with zombies, augers, so we got to get you out of here. So if you miss too many, this will happen. Additionally, if you miss a select auger or select trap at different points throughout the game, they'll also pull the switch. So, for example, if one of the girls is caught or trapped, he'll also pull the switch and say, hey, you failed to protect them, so we got to get you out of here.
Kefka... 44, the stream should be showing in 1080p. It should be an option for you to select. I'm streaming in 1080p.
No, he says, when are we going to see this on Steam?
Oh, Steam. I thought you meant when we're going to see the stream in 1080p.
So that's definitely possible. So I was working on that. And I guess what it comes down to is here's the roadblock that I ran into. First of all, I'm not 100% certain of who owns the rights. It's one of two people. And the other issue was I wrote it all in JavaScript and HTML, so it worked in the browser, which basically worked everywhere. I tried it out on iPhone, Windows Phone, all the desktop platforms, and it works. The issue is the video player inside of the browsers is still okay, but switching between feeds this quickly just hasn't been done before, so I'm kind of having to like break the web to make it happen. So what I was considering was bringing it over to another tool like Unity, mm-hmm. Which is a really popular middleware game development tool. And someone else in the Facebook group had also done basically the same thing for Double Switch, which is a very similar game also made by Digital Pictures, but stars Corey Haim of the Two Corys fame. Mm-hmm. And he did a fantastic job of getting it running, but you have to do all these weird hacks and tricks to get it going. Full motion video games are incredibly difficult for a number of reasons, but in the browser it becomes even more tricky. So is it possible? Definitely. I hit some roadblocks, but in terms of getting the first 5 minutes done, I'm at about 98%. I just had to take a break because I was getting so burnt out. At a certain point of working on a game, you're not even making a game, you're just fixing bugs, and that's the point I got into. And because the browser, every browser handles video completely different, it becomes a bit of a project. So yeah, it could work on Steam, no problem.
Oh, crazy. I can't, it like ejects it the game Steam after you're done with it. After it finishes. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right, so are you playing on it? Oh, you have a Model 1 Sega CD, don't you?
The best model.
I know. Man, I'm jealous. So I've got three Sega CD2s. I've always wanted a Model 1. But, oh, yeah, wow, you're not kidding. It actually ejects it.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I wonder why it does that. Wow. That is definitely interesting. But yeah, so, I mean,
yeah, Sega CD Model 1 is like the best. It's like that with the Genesis is like my favorite looking, console.
It's got more moving parts though. That makes me kind of nervous.
And that's the issue I ran into 3DO. I've got two of those, and disk drive broke in my first one. So like the more moving parts, the scarier.
Yeah.
That's why top loader was so important later on in life cycle for so many consoles.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of stupid how wide the Model 2 makes the whole setup.
Oh, yeah.
And I've had to take it apart several times, too. The two other models that Sega CDs that I have, the fuse went in them. So if you actually take that thing apart, there's a very, very small portion of the Sega CD that's actually the plastic PC board. Everything else is just, like, hollow. So... it's obscenely large for whatever reason. I don't know. I'm trying to see how many people are in this chat. Let me see.
35 people watching.
35, all right. Let's see. What do you folks think so far? So, yeah, absolutely blast of a game. There are the Sega CD models, by the way, too. So there's the XI, right?
Right.
There's the Sega CD 32X combo. There's this game, like I said before, it exists on the Sega CD 32X, which I always thought those had a really cool box art, right? Because they can kind of combine the colors, right? They have like part yellow from the 32X part.
Right.
Actually, yeah. Corey, a while ago, you gave me
Fahrenheit.
Yes. I was playing that the other day. Yeah, you gave me Fahrenheit, which is a 32X CD game. Yeah, so you can kind of bounce from room to room. It seems like controlled chaos. That's largely what it is. Because the first few times you play, right, you don't know which rooms to go to or what's happening. But as you play through several times, you'll come to remember, like, oh, I know this event is going to happen in this room, or the conversation starts here, and then it gets brought on to this other room later on.
I like when sometimes the clips, they have to get them over fast enough that they speed it up.
Yep. Yeah, like the traps, right?
Well, just like you'll see in a second, one of them comes out of the thing, and he's like moving really fast. It's like the tape is sped up.
Yeah. Like it's kind of like the James Bond films. They used to do that. Like right here, when you're in the entryway, you're going through. He quickly runs like.
What is the quickest playthrough of a successful game?
Oh, they're all going to be the same time, identically.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So I think it's about 28 minutes.
28 minutes?
Yeah. About 28 minutes.
If I don't finish it by the end, if I, like, with a half hour left, I'll just look up an FAQ.
Oh, yeah. I mean, put it this way. Short of you using, like, a pre-compiled list that you found online, like, you're never going to figure this out on your own without playing through it, you know, a dozen times or so.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since I've, like, played through the whole thing.
Like when you were a kid, did you like write notes or did you just commit everything to memory?
I had a marble notebook and I would keep track of which room they were in. I'd make a little list, which room and what time to catch, and then also another list for which room and which time the passwords would change. Yeah. So it's quite a bit going on here, but it's interesting as you piece it together in your head multiple times from going through it so often, because you'll say, oh, well, this makes sense because now I know what they were saying in the kitchen and what they were saying in the living room, so I see what those two sides are talking about.
She says, these are your friends that you've met at the shopping mall.
Right, and that's how I said before, right? She met him at the mall and invited him over for, you know, a party at their house.
Now, when you
And, like, Lisa's,
switch...
like, 10 years, like 7 years older than everybody else. Like, the one in the pink.
Yeah.
She's like way older. Like she's the one that's like gonna buy him beer.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought.
She's like,
I used to
hi.
Think too. Yeah. She's like the full blown out hair.
Yeah.
And my little brother Danny.
Now, anytime you switch scenes, like does the same frames of video play on each second regardless?
Yes.
Or it's not like it loads the scene like at the start of the scene or
No. Like you can drop it in the middle.
Okay.
Yes. So that was extremely tricky. It took me forever to realize how they do that, especially because today, right, we have RAM, and you guys are both video editors, so you understand how that works. Right, we can store this information in RAM so we can quickly access it later on. The Sega CD and 32X, Sega CD didn't give it any additional RAM, and Genesis had basically nothing to begin with. So it has to read it on the fly. So every time you're switching scenes, what it's doing is it's waiting till the disc spins, till it gets to that part of the disc. It starts playing that scene, and then immediately looks for that timestamp. So it says, oh, wait, I know that right now I should be playing the 409 mark in the kitchen because you selected this. And it looks up a little table and says, what's playing at 409? Start at this frame. Which sounds complicated, but then when I saw how they did this with VHS and how this unnamed gentleman explained to me how it worked, I was blown away with how people figured this out in the mid-80s on a VHS cassette.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I do love, though, like, I can't think of a lot of games that do it quite like this, but I love how, like, Majora's Mask, for example. I love having people do things at the exact same time. It's just the process of figuring it out and figuring out what people are up to and what you can do to change the outcome of events.
Yep.
Like, that is a really... So, I mean, I think I would be pretty into this game. I mean, I love that. The only game that I can think of that did anything quite like that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there are games where certain things happen at certain times, but not in a sense where you know, obviously the replay mechanic isn't built into Night Trap here, but they know you're going to be playing it multiple times to figure it out. You know, whereas in Zelda, it's a built-in mechanic. But like Radiata Stories on the PS2, which I
actually have that game.
I kind of consider a bit of a hidden gem because it's like it, you know,
the side-scrolling like JRPG.
Sort of.
Yeah, I got like 3 hours into it. And
yeah, the perspective when you're running around is a little bit side-scrolling.
Yeah.
Not entirely. I mean, it's 3D, but it everyone has a daily schedule. So the same people are walking in the same spot every day, and you can recruit basically everyone in the entire town.
Yeah,
if you just figure out what they're up to and what you can do to solve their problems. So it's kind of like that in the sense that, you know, that resets every day. And I don't know, there's just some weird appeal to that to me, to just like figure out like. Well, it's just, I don't know, it's just cool to think that everyone does these exact things. That it's just, I love the complexity of that.
It's kind of like they have like a real, like, living, breathing world that you're kind of sucked into for that brief period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
No, go ahead, because I was going to start something else.
I wasn't anything.
I was going to ask if you ever played Dracula Unleashed.
No.
Oh, okay. So that's another one. I started doing a Let's Play of this last week, and I've finished the game today, and again, another Sega CD game, not done by Digital Pictures. I think it was done by Viacom, and I have a Sega CD version and DOS, and DOS is what I actually wound up recording, and it's very similar in that select events happen at certain times throughout a day, so it's basically a sequel to Dracula, where you're not sure if you're going after Dracula or Jack the Ripper, and it winds up that Dracula is actually the Jack the Ripper character we're looking for.
Gasp.
Yeah. So you can kind of hop in your stagecoach and go from location to location, but this is more of an adventure game in that you have to have certain items in your hand at certain times. So you might go to the telegraph office, you might go home, pick up a letter from the telegram. It might have some kind of information for you along with an item. You need to put that item in your hand and then go to a university where you can hear your dictaphone and hear this message that someone had left for you. So another interesting aspect, but in playing through today, I was... Nice catch.
Oh, I mean, no, I just missed this other guy.
Oh. So playing through this, I realized like it was extremely difficult. No idea how I beat this as a kid because there's so many events that need to happen at precise times throughout the day. where this is a bit more clear in Night Trap. So, Ty, were you like an FMV person growing up or no?
No, not. I mean,
you were a Nintendo kid, weren't you?
I was very much a Nintendo kid. So, I didn't have, CD based games until I got the PlayStation. And even then, I didn't play FMV games. But I sort of I played like my uncle had like Mad Dog McCree on his computer.
Oh, yeah.
And I
also
have
not the DVD player.
Say what?
Not his DVD player.
No, it was a PC version.
Yeah.
And I don't remember playing a lot, but I have developed a real love, not to say I have gone out and experienced a ton, but I love the idea of FMV games.
Yeah, you and I both.
The first one that I really got into, this is really like within the past generation. Fast Draw Showdown was released as a downloadable WiiWare game.
Okay.
And are you familiar with it?
No, I'm looking this up now. This looks identical.
It is awesome. I saw this in the arcade back
in the day. Oh, American Laser Games. Oh, yes.
I saw it in the arcade back in the day, and I never played it. I mean, I wasn't a big arcade kid either.
Okay.
But I remember seeing it, and the WiiWare version is a lot of fun. It's also is a move game on PS3.
How have I not been aware of any of this?
It is so awesome. Like literally, it is only like you just encounter all of these, all of these people in the Wild West, and you gotta shoot them before they shoot you. And it's just watching what they do to draw at the right time. You can't draw before they do.
Yeah.
Like you have to watch
to react.
And it's just it's so stupid, but it's so fun. And I love the personality of the characters. It's just it's so cheesy but very, very charming.
Yeah, that just reminds me of Ground Zero Texas. Have you played that before?
Mm-hmm. No.
Very similar. Also done by Digital Pictures. I think it was one of their later games. Either late 94, early 95. And it takes place in Texas. And it's very similar to Night Trap. You only have four cameras you're watching, though. But a lot of people, they're aware that you're watching them through this camera system. Most of their FMV games took place behind cameras for whatever reason. And people will kind of quickly draw. Like they'll walk by and looking in a crowd trying to figure out, okay, who's the alien? It's part Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I should say. So you're trying to say, who is the alien in this crowd? And they'll quickly turn, pull a gun or laser and try to blast at you. So it's very similar. But that footage, I think, looked much clearer than a lot of the other games out there.
I played on PS3 Dragon Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
Which it took a little longer for me to warm up to, but then I got pretty into it. It's hard. But it's good. I like it. I haven't played Dragon's Lair 2, but I have heard a friend of mine said it's a lot less fair.
The first one was by no means easy.
Yeah, but I think like you have to get like all these, you have to find all of these treasures or something like that along the way, or else you just get stuck at some point. I think it was like 2 Octobers ago, I played Phantasm. Not Phantasm. Phantasmagoria.
Oh yes, yes, cool PC game.
Yeah, that was interesting, and I won't play Phantasmagoria 2. Phantasmagoria was another game that I think had some controversy surrounding it.
Oh yeah, definitely, and I've obviously heavy use of FMV in that game too.
Yeah, yeah. I what can I say? I like cheesy stuff,
There's nothing wrong with that.
It kind of kind of resonates with me. I would love to, you know, be involved in like the video production aspect of, you know, an FMV style game. If anyone can start the retro revival revolution on that.
Well, you know, I guess we'll have to get started. I mean, so as I'm starting to remake a lot of these games, I should say that the Night Trap thing I was doing is really, I was more remaking an engine than anything else. So I can kind of put in all these games, and all that code is open source and available. So if anyone wants it, take it. That's what it's there for. But as I'm building this, I'm like, oh,
so
my
this
goodness.
Is like, this is like the controversial part. I mean, I'm yes. going to lose anyways. I'm sorry. You can go ahead. I didn't mean to.
Oh, well, let's watch this controversial part real quick. So I'm kind of going to watch it later on or catch up to the feed. Yeah. Yes, right. So this young woman is in a bathroom in like a nightgown. And she's not doing anything, there's nothing sexual. She's taking out her earrings, kind of doing her hair and taking off her makeup just to go to sleep. And there's an auger in the shower, you know, like a clear through plastic shower, just kind of staring at her, waiting for the right time to kind of strike.
They have these things that like drill into people's necks and it drains all their blood out.
Yep. And I mean, you really don't see anything on screen, like other than this thing go around her neck and then...
The drill. Like, I mean, the drill is, like, pretty scary looking, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. it's like, it looks like a cattle thing you'd use on a cow or something.
Yeah.
And then, like, that was it. But when you, like, look at the context of it in this B-style horror movie and everything, like...
And, like, the guy in the thing is just like, I don't believe what I just saw. Like, he's like, okay, so we're just going to, like, take you off the thing and, like, whatever happens, everybody else.
So you guys going to go in and bust some heads or...
Yeah, no. It's like, you have some definitive proof now that there's something going on.
Yeah.
I mean that drill thing is pretty intense, but there's, like, you know, there's nothing like, you know, I just don't get what the fuss is.
Yeah, they're just kind of hanging out there.
I mean, this is what you know, this is what me and a friend call 80s PG.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not, you know, it's nothing that like extreme or anything, but admittedly 80s PG was a whole lot harder than it is today, but
yep.
You know. Still PG.
Looking back, like it just doesn't seem that bad. I mean, overall, like it seems like they kept the cost somewhat low for this game. I mean, it was about $1.5 million to produce the whole thing. But when you look at it, I mean, they essentially shot an entire movie, right? Especially when you consider all the additional footage and the branching paths. But now, like 1.5 million people look at that and be like, oh, you made a small indie game, huh? right. So it's like wild to see, you know, in terms of how cost and things change over the years. So... Yeah, really, I think what helped propel this game and put it into, you know, modern infamy was the fact that Joe Lieberman, who was a senator at the time, was going after, or Congress, I should say, he was going after Mortal Kombat, Lethal Enforcers, and Doom, which led to the ESRB game rating. So they had this thing pulled from Toys R Us and KB Toys, thinking this was going to manipulate the minds of the youth of America in the future. Just wait until, you know, years later we play, you know, first person shooters and Grand Theft Auto and things of that nature, right?
I mean, almost every single game released, you know, on PS4 and Xbox One is like 100 times more deserving of a you know, any degree of I don't know if I should say they're deserving of controversy, but I mean they're way more intense than this in every way. I mean it's actually kind of unbelievable, like really thinking about it, because like you look at what's available for, you know, I mean Wii U is completely different in terms of the kinds of games it offers. I mean Nintendo systems always are, but when you look at it. Sony and Microsoft, especially over this generation and last, like there's really, like I look at that and sometimes I think, what are kids even playing? Like, what is there available for a younger kid to play on these systems? Not a lot.
It's like Minecraft.
That's like about it. You know, I mean,
I like that they pull up, like, when everybody gets there, they're all singing "Row, row, row your boat" when the car pulls up.
Yeah, right. Like, who's doing this? someone asks, "Hey, you're playing on the Sega CD? How's it compared to Sega CD 32X?" Larger image on the 32X, cleaner graphics. That means it's less grainy. Slightly increased frame rate, I think by 3 frames a second. All the images have been replaced. So like the UI you're looking at, it looks slightly different on every platform. The images I grabbed are also from the 32X version. It's the same games. The gameplay is absolutely identical. It's just really improved fidelity, and the audio quality is improved a little bit. Oh yeah, someone says, "Hey gang, let's sing some Public Domain songs." Oh yeah, that's probably why. Oh god. Yeah, so this came by the or was largely responsible for the ESRB rating. That's the Electronic Software Ratings Board, which for gamers in America.
Well, there was one before the ESRB, which is the one.
Oh, was there?
There was like there was like one that was only on Genesis games.
Isn't that, if I'm not mistaken, isn't the Genesis rating system what ultimately evolved into the ESRB?
Yeah, I think it's what happened.
I think it's more or less the same organization.
Yeah, because Congress said, hey, either the government, can regulate you, or you can regulate yourselves. And the software industry said, whoa, we don't trust more government oversight. We'll take care of this. And then for clarity, other nations wanted doing their own thing. So, for example, if you're going to release a title in Europe now, you'd have to go through PEGI and have a rating there. And their ratings boards are very similar, but we should be clear that cultural standards are very different. And by that, I mean, when I went to Gamescom, which is the world's largest games convention, sexuality is perfectly fine in Europe, and especially Germany, where Gamescom is held. So games that had any kind of sexuality you could view in the open, cosplay, everything like that. But violence was taboo. So you had to actually sign a form, have an ID showing you were 18 plus to go play a violent game. It was all behind hidden walls. Over here at GDC, that's the Game Developer Conference or Penny Arcade Expo in America, it's just the opposite. Sexuality is very taboo and violence was acceptable. So you can get away with a lot more or many different things in either country. And that's a large reason why you have such a different ratings board.
And now in Germany, I want to think Germany in particular is especially hard on violence.
Yes. I mean,
I don't know if German versions are still all that censored.
I know for a fact they can't have any sort of like Nazi paraphernalia or references to that time. In terms of like blood and guns, I know it has to be toned down quite a bit, not to the level that China requires. So, for example, World of Warcraft, when they had the expansion for Wrath of the Lich King, in like 2006 or 7 or so, Blizzard had to go through and redo all of the art and aesthetics for that expansion, which included things like red blood and exposed body parts. So, for example, a lot of the characters had exposed ribs and bone cages and things like that. And they had to redo all those skins for China. The blood cannot be red. It can be something like green or purple. And you can have different textures instead of bones exposed.
You know, Europe has Probotector instead of Contra.
Yep, right.
You know, which is like, okay, so it's robots fighting aliens instead of humans fighting aliens, and that's less violent, I guess.
Yeah. right, exactly. It's like, oh, what a difference. Or look at TMNT, Turtles in Time on Super NES, right? For that, all the Foot Clan, they're turned to robots. When you beat them up, they have explosions instead of blood.
But wasn't it that way in the cartoon? Was it not that way in the cartoon as well?
Yeah, I don't know.
Were they robots? I want to say there might have been robots in the cartoon, but I can't remember for sure.
I distinctly remember seeing them at SNES and thinking, like, why are they blowing up?
I think it's kind of a trope with games in general.
Let's say, there you go. You got the password change. Perfect.
Yeah, but I missed it. I missed what they said.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't green.
Oh, did you hear it?
Green is the default. Oh, no. Is green blue the default or green the default?
Blue is the default.
Oh,
okay. But I thought it was green. It's just like It's completely randomized, too. Well, not just that. It's like adding challenge to it. It's like to hear what the code changes like in between your guys' voice.
Yeah.
It's just like added challenge. It's nice fine. Like it's totally fine.
Oh yeah, Paladin has a good point. How in Europe the Ninja Turtles were the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles,
right?
Because for some reason ninjas were deemed too violent. Which I mean, okay, sure. I guess if you really think about it, ninjas are violent, but you know.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember, Dave? Do you know what the minimum amount you need to catch to beat the game?
No idea. I mean, well, more than half. I know that.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'll probably have to wait until the next code change. I'll let you know when it's coming up. The next code change is coming at 9 o'clock. So, 2 more minutes.
Now, is there any pausing in this?
Yeah, you can hit start and pause the game.
Yeah, and then you can move rooms then, too, which is nice.
It'll skip a few frames, though. So, yeah, it's not really going to help you out. You're not going to like go backward in time or anything like that, you know? They had all kinds of tricks there. Double Switch was another very similar game. Like I said, it was done by the Corey Haim of the two Corey's fame.
Right.
Debbie Harry, played by Blondie. Or I should say Blondie. She was in Double Switch with him. It's very similar.
It's actually like a lot more complicated, really.
Yes. And there's three traps or two to three traps per room. And you've actually got to prime or arm a trap before you can use it. And if you prime or arm too many at once, it'll overload your power. So they definitely added a little more to these games. But the production quality also improved over time, too. But surprisingly, Digital Pictures wasn't really cranking out that many games over that period of time. And I guess, you know, actually looking back, they probably had about 12 releases in... It says they founded in 91, and they probably stopped in 95. So when I look back now, it's actually not bad at all, especially when you consider this was like AAA for that time. Or I guess, hell, if you're releasing anything on a console in the 90s, that's AAA, right?
Close enough, yeah. I mean, there's not really
anything else.
Yeah, there's not like a way that... I mean, it was difficult anyway for just a couple of people in a garage to... get a game out. I mean, I guess they did, but you had to go through people. You couldn't just do it.
Yeah, it was a definitely a bit of a project. To get all this going. Figure out how the hardware worked. There just wasn't really as much documentation. There weren't any forums to ask questions. You couldn't use middleware like, hey, how do I call the local Unity guy and figure out how to do this? So it's really just, hey, you'd better figure this thing out.
Otherwise. Hang on, he's going to change the code. Exactly. I just want to hear what it's going to be.
Yeah, change that code. That again.
I guess I'm a little lost on what the code changing thing is about.
Corey, do you want to explain or should I?
Wait, no, I missed the question. I was like looking for the.
I'm confused. What you mean by passwords and changing the code? Like what?
You have there's a color code that you have to. The trap. You see how it says like yellow or whatever on screen or red or blue.
Right now it says purple.
Okay. So they changed the code, the access code. That's what you have to have the right code to use the traps.
So they how change do you it learn the code?
They talk about it. So you got to like listen for them to say like, hey, how about we change the code to yellow?
Yep, and he can just hit a button at any point and change the code. Oh, so I understand the confusion. Okay, so where Tri's confused is, how the hell do these people know about changing the code? Right,
because the people you're watching their house.
I'm confused about everything.
Okay. So here's a bit more exposition, which they explain at that first minute and a half scene. So the traps are already in the house. They're planted there or created by the people who own the home. So what your team has done is actually made an override onto these traps so you can control them. And the camera system is something new that I believe your team has just kind of created, as far as I understand. I don't think they're ever... clear on that. So anyway, your team is tied in. You control these things. It doesn't make any sense why they actually changed the passwords. Like, because, you know, even at some point the mom says, hey, we should change the password just to be safe. Like, well, safe from what? Like, I mean, how often do you change, you know, the keys on your door or your password to your email?
Just something to make it more complicated.
Yeah, some randomization. Yeah, so that's how those traps are there throughout the house. And you're just tying into them. And here you go. You can see some of your other agents are kind of coming by the house throughout the evening.
They, like, all managed to, like, get killed. Almost all of them, at least.
They're, like, the worst special agents ever.
It's just, like, so amazing how, like, the girls are completely oblivious to this whole situation.
Listen, yeah. they just want a party.
In the closet? I never understood that. It's like a triangle with, like, two beads at the end. It looks like a sex toy more than
I think that's the kind of idea. Because she's like, what is this? And they're like, oh, it's nothing. That's my parents.
Yeah, it's like, oh. But, I mean, they do leave some things to the imagination because you don't get to see all of the rooms in the house, right? Like, where this auger's coming from on hall two. Like, you don't know where he came from. So, like, obviously, you don't see everyone's bedrooms and things. You're kind of imagining that to yourself. But, yeah, I mean, for the amount of story and how involved you get, I mean, it's quite the investment. But especially when you consider basically the things we're playing at this time are like side-scrolling platformers. And then Phantasy Star and some cool stuff like that. But yeah, for something like this, which is so far ahead of the curve, I think I got my $50 worth. Although I'm not going to lie, I got the Sega CD in 94. So it was just as it was about to go the way of the dinosaur because of Sega's mismanagement between the Genesis, Sega CD, 32X, Saturn. So Funko Land was actually a store we had in New York. Did they have by you guys?
I don't think Corey's ever been to a Funko Land.
I've been to one.
Funko Land.
That was heaven. That was heaven.
There has never been a better game store than Funko Land.
Funko Land, the badges, EB Games, all got bought up by what is GameStop now and just completely changed them around. But imagine GameStop, but with a monthly flyer where it listed all the games, the prices, and the platforms. And it would change pretty often, but you had something to look forward to. It was basically like a printed out paper that you would bring home. It looks like a newspaper, and it would have those deals. But you could trade in your games, get decent prices. And where I guess now it's much more commercialized, right? Like, you know, you're going to see a million Call of Duties if you go to GameStop. Back then, it was like, "Oh my God, I hope this GameStop has Night Trap."
Yeah, I mean, it was a good store to have.
Yes.
You know, in the '90s, when I was starting to like get back into systems that weren't just the current system.
Yep.
And it was a great time to be just. I mean, you could just go there and you could get almost any NES game you could think of for $5.
Yeah.
And it was a good time to be, you know, that's when I was getting into RPGs, so I could, I wasn't into RPGs until after the Super Nintendo was already over. Well,
right.
I could go to Funko Land, and I was able to get all of these Super Nintendo RPGs and stuff before they were expensive like they are now. So it was I was really fortunate to have a store.
Hey, guys, I
got to
change the access code. Hang on a second.
I saw you caught the augers there and saved her. Nice job.
Yeah, hang on.
See, this is where the game really starts to heat up.
Hang on.
We got big, big problems.
What?
The Augs are here.
All right. I'll go downstairs and reset the access code to orange.
Orange.
Orange. At the end of the Sega CD life cycle, I mean, there's not that many games, but I owned about 3/4 of them. And you could buy them for like 50 cents, 75 cents, for $1,000. And in third, fourth, fifth game, fifth grade, when I was the of age when the console came out, it was extremely affordable. So, I mean, I probably own 3/4 of the catalog for about $40.
Wow.
I play a bunch of games, trade them in, and you could buy games for 50 cents. I got this game for $2.50 from Funko Land.
See, if certain games like Popful Mail weren't like really expensive, I would probably get a Sega CD, but like the games that I'm interested in are just too expensive, so I haven't bothered to get a Sega CD.
It's
even though, I mean, it can play burn disc without any modification, but you know, that's not what I want to do.
Yeah, definitely.
But
Yeah, it gets expensive.
It's the same situation as Sega Saturn, where the list of games that are both good and affordable is very small.
Yeah, definitely.
Not to say that there aren't a lot of good games, but it's just that the good ones are expensive.
Yeah, I actually wound up getting a Japanese Saturn so I could play a lot of the games.
Yeah, they're
way more affordable
cheap.
That way.
Yeah.
Yes, Corey's cranking through this thing again. But you're getting the hang of it, right? Because you're
yeah. Well, I'm looking at it.
What changes are?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at a thing now.
Cheater.
I know, but I mean, I want to be able to like get further into the game for the stream.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yes, it's a lot of like going back and playing, and it's one of those things where once you listen to the conversations, it all makes sense, and you piece it together in your head.
So does the password change? Like, is
random every time you play.
It is random. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, apparently there's a Super NES version of Popful Mail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually got it. I haven't played through it yet.
Well,
but
it was Super Famicom. It wasn't released on the NES.
Yeah, it's Super Famicom.
Oh, okay.
I covered it in my episode, actually, on Popful Mail.
Yeah. I mean, I got it. I mean, I've Corey didn't think it was that great. I've heard some people say it's pretty good. Some people say it's not that great. And my general assumption is that it's, you know, people dislike it because it's not the Sega CD version. And, you know, if you don't have the Sega CD version, it's probably better than nothing. So,
yeah, no, definitely.
So I want to play it. Both versions look cool to me. So.
Yeah, like I said, you got that FrameMeister, so it looks beautiful no matter what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Well, as you can see, like from the stream, you're probably noticing that like the FrameMeister definitely does not do full motion video any favors.
Nah.
Me and Dave were talking about that. I think when you were off fixing your controller, but you know, I feel like there is a certain appeal to the excessively dithered aesthetic.
Yeah. I could appreciate that.
Yeah, there's something to it. Someone was someone commented on the PS1 video saying I'm not too clear on what dithering is, but I'm using a sync on Luma cable and I've got all these dots all over the screen. And he said I'm not real clear on what dithering is, but I don't know if it's that or not. And I said, well, I'm not positive, but it's probably dithering you're talking about.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny, like I was doing the episode, I didn't really realize just how prevalent dithering is on PS1. I've been playing PS1 games on the FrameMeister, but I just hadn't paid that much attention except when it's really prominent. Like Silent Hill is all about the dithering.
Oh yeah.
But even Metal Gear Solid, what I think is so funny is even like the Konami logo screen like has like this faint dithering, even in like the white and the orange and the red colors, you know, it's just those three solid colors, but for some reason there's like this faint dithered overlay over it.
Yeah. So they're trying to like just fill in whatever they can at that point.
It's unnecessary, but whatever. I noticed a really weird thing that dither patterns render differently on the PS1 and the PS2. Like, so it kind of makes me wonder, like, if dithering was some sort of system level effect.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's largely a software thing, just to kind of fill in the gaps wherever they can.
Mm-hmm.
Or like on Sega CD, it looks very boxy, and that's because they could only draw so many colors, so they're basically having to every frame of the footage is on screen, having to kind of test, hey, what should the color be around here, and blend those together, and that's why it looks like that. But to give you like a rough idea of like what's actually running on, so the RAM was 6 megabits, bits, not bytes. So a byte is 8 times more than a bit. okay, graphics. Okay, so you're looking at 320 by 224. And that looks like if it was full screen, but a quarter screen, you're looking at 256 by 224. So that's how many pixels are on screen.
It's an anamorphic ratio, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Which is weird,
I mean,
right?
I mean, it is weird because typically the kind of movie that this is trying to emulate would not be shot on that kind of film.
Right.
Usually that's more of, you know, saved for more of the epics.
Yep, definitely.
But I'm sure a large part of the reason that they did that was to save rendering space,
mm-hmm.
which is not something you still see today, but very often they did it like... Resident Evil 4, for example, was letterboxed widescreen. Yep. But, you know, that comes with the advantage of saving pixels for rendering.
That's right. And it looks that much better in the end because of exactly that. Because it gives more of a cinematic look, but it's like faking one thing to give you another.
They're able to push the overall graphics more because they have fewer pixels to render.
Yep.
And, I totally forgot, but I was recording a bunch of GameCube footage this past week, and Beyond Good and Evil does the same thing. Wow. Yeah. The only modern example I can think of like that is...
Wait, guys, there's going to be a code change. Hang on.
Change the trap access code from blue to orange.
Orange.
Orange again.
It's all in the fingers.
Hunting. Orange.
But the only modern game that I can think of that I've seen do that is The Evil Within,
mm-hmm.
which was another Shinji Mikami game, you know, pulling the same trick, except, then that one is anamorphic within, you know.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because the game is actually pretty poorly optimized for the most part.
Yeah, so, I noticed that too.
So they didn't really take much advantage of the saved pixels. But this is still a right game. It's no Resident Evil 4. But
and I think you guys covered an N64 game that did this as well. Is made by Rare. N64, Rare, and not Claymation, Stop Motion. Very similar to what they did with Donkey Kong. It's in one of your videos, I'm telling you.
From Rare?
I'm almost positive it was done by Rare, and it was same thing. They shrunk the screen size, and you were highlighting this as one of the points for when you'd want to expand to make full screen or zoom in on the FrameMeister.
Gosh, what could it have been?
I'll try to find it.
Why am I drawing a blank?
Hopefully someone will pop it in the chat. But... Not Conquer. No, not Blast Corps. No.
I know that, like, it's not Rare, but Mischief Makers has...
Mischief Makers, yes. I don't know why I thought that was a Rare game.
Yeah, that's Treasure.
That's what it was.
Treasure.
Treasure. Treasure.
Mischief Makers...
it's a treasure. It's treasure.
It's pretty letterboxed. Yeah, they save a lot of pixels in that, and so you can zoom it way up.
Yeah.
I've got the HDMI mod for my N64 now, and the final firmware for it offers more. More scaling options than the review unit that I borrowed, and yeah. I think the first game I tested was Mischief Makers. Like, that's like that's like my go-to N64 game to like test and show off stuff, just because it's got sprites and stuff, and
yep,
so it's easy to show off.
Yeah, pretty looking game. In terms of, like, sprites on this thing too. Sega CD limited to 512 colors, but only 64 simultaneously.
That's like a huge...
Just the fact that you can draw video onto a screen with only 64 colors, it's like, how are you doing this?
It's so crazy, really, to think back and think how number of colors can be... a limitation for a system, like if we pushed more colors than this, we'd be chugging.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and really though, I mean, you know, me not being, you know, a programmery sort or a
there's gonna be a code change. Here it comes. Sorry, uh-huh. I
that girl looks exactly like Madeline.
Not that again.
No, not that again.
Come on, Studley, we better change that code. How about yellow?
Yellow. Come on, Studley, you better change. Let's change that code.
So it looks like on the trivia for Wikia, so Sega CD Wikia, they say some games claim to have 112, 192, or up to 256 colors, and Snatcher seems to be one of them, but they're not positive of this for whatever reason. Although it's kind of weird they can't do this. I mean, you can decompile the source code. I couldn't get to go, but that video Ripper that I was using from Paul Jensen will actually grab every frame and show you all the colors and the color palette on the side. So that was cool. So I don't see why you couldn't do the same thing here. But they said that... Okay, so the most common way of displaying extra colors to the Sega CD is the use of raster effects, which involves simply changing the on-screen color palette in between TV scan lines as the picture is being drawn. Sonic games use this to make underwater effects.
Oh.
Yeah.
There, I learned something interesting not too long ago that the Super Game Boy can actually have color palettes based on boxes drawn around the screen. So, for example, if you've got like the lower, you know, 1/6 or whatever of the screen taken up with a HUD, that can have a totally different color palette from the rest of the scene. Or like in Pokemon battles, like the screen is pretty much blank.
Yeah.
But each Pokemon can have, because there's no like bounds of the box, like there's nothing in the background, each Pokemon has a box drawn around them so they can have their own completely separate color palette from each other, which I never really gave that much deep thought until I saw it pointed out that is how, you know, because, you know, you're really only dealing with four colors on Game Boy, but that's how Super Game Boy can squeeze a little more out.
Haha.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, and like a lot of pretty games in that too.
Oh yeah, I love it is such a shame.
Think of the credit deserved, right?
That no backwards compatible, nothing that succeeded the Super Game Boy, Game Boy Color, GameCube, Game Boy Player, none of it ever used the Super Game Boy color palettes again.
Yeah,
and those were so much better. I mean, you know, you pop in any given Super Game Boy compatible, you know, or Super Game Boy enhanced game into a Super Game Boy, the color palette in that is always going to look better than anything you could get on a Game Boy Color or on the GameCube.
Yeah.
Using, I mean, you know, you can set any combination of color palettes, but none of them are going to look as good as what the Super Game Boy could do. And I just don't understand why those were never available on any of those other options. It's such a shame.
I know. And so many good games on the Game Boy as well. I'm a huge, huge fan of Link's Awakening. God, that soundtrack from beginning to end. Like, I feel like that was just years ahead of anything else that was at the time, especially on that platform.
Oh, yeah. Link's Awakening and Donkey Kong Knife were definitely my two favorite Game Boy games.
And like even again, from like a technical standpoint and someone who writes games now, seeing how they did it back then, like, that just blows my mind.
the Game Boy's kind of taking a bit of a revival for me lately because, I don't know, I've just been kind of digging back in further into it, finding out what's there that, you know, I'd sort of written off Game Boy as finished for me, but there's a few decent things.
You know Jeremy Parrish, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he has a Game Boy project. You've been following along with that?
Yeah, I have been.
So he
like Game Boy World or something like that.
Yeah, he has I think a site and definitely a book on going through like the entire Game Boy catalog. It's pretty wild.
Oh wow.
Yeah, Game Boy World, is that what it is?
Yeah, that's like it's a YouTube series he's doing.
I'm glad you brought that up because there's actually a site I've been a fan of for, God, at least 10 years now. It's called FMVWorld.com. It does exactly what you think it would do. It's all FMV games. And like when I first started reading this, like in the first month that it came out, I was like, holy cow, I can't believe this.
Big, big problems.
What?
The Augs are here.
All right. I'll go downstairs and reset the access code to purple.
Purple. Okay. Okay, this is a CD change anyways. I was just trying to get to this.
Oh, you're making awesome progress.
Well, I'm using a...
CD change?
Yeah, it's two discs.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't believe I didn't know that.
Yeah. Look, you got to fit a lot of footage on this thing.
Okay, I'm going to bring it back.
I just thought it was pretty cool that it can kind of hold your place and just go from there. So FMVWorld.com, your home for full motion video. When it first came out, at least over a decade ago, I thought, yeah, I'll give it a couple weeks. This thing gets updated like on a weekly basis with new FMV stuff. It's great.
That is awesome.
Like, you would never think that there's that much happening with that world, but you have things like Tex Murphy, the Tesla effect. You have Dragon's Lair, right? They're trying to do a movie campaign when this Night Trap thing was happening. So I'm glad there still are FMV games being made. If you're not familiar, well, you guys, have you played Tex Murphy or any of those games before?
No, and I hadn't heard of that. I hadn't even heard of it until the Kickstarter came about.
Oh, so good. So the most recent game, Tesla Effect, came out April of 2014. And you can get it for maybe $10 now. All made with Unity. And it was a series of point-and-click adventure games that I think ended up created into FMV games in the early and mid-90s.
They were remakes. FMV games were remakes of
So the first game that they did, I think it was called Under a Killing Moon, was actually like a side-scrolling point-and-click adventure, which they then remade as an FMV game that was still a point-and-click adventure. They had about three or four of those. They were really, really good. And I played through them on GOG, good old games, about 4 or 5 years ago.
Hey, guys, there's one more code change here in a second.
Okay.
I think that might be the last one for the game.
We'll see.
Let's go down to the control room. Maybe Tony has seen Augs.
Gotcha.
I'd feel better if we switched the code again into green. We don't want anyone else...
Green, there we go.
I'd feel better.
Yeah, so the most recent one, Tesla Effect, came out about 2 years ago. And I'm hoping they keep it going because I absolutely love what they're doing with this. What were you going to say? Try?
I forget.
That's all right. So FMV, I don't think it's going away, surprisingly.
those augers come in and they like give each other a high five.
So you've captured 49 of these things.
He knows what he's doing now.
Well, I mean, I'm just using the list. I mean, the list is so easy to find.
I know, but like, how many are in the whole game?
I don't know.
I don't remember what the final number was. So the second like disc, I haven't played in probably about a year because I've just been playing the first 5 minutes over and over and over and over and over for like. Yeah, in fact, I do give a five.
My family, my kind. You'd never understand.
That's great.
What was that? They were like after they fell down that trap. There was like it almost looked like a wipe, but the scene didn't change.
Yeah,
there was. There's like glass that opens up.
They
get caught behind.
Ooh, they found bloody ice pops.
Oh yeah.
And they grab Dana Plateau's gun.
That tastes like blood. Everything goes crazy suddenly.
Yeah. Actually, another thing that led to the controversy behind this was Dana Plato,
yeah.
Had died of a drug overdose probably mid-90s, late 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was very popular in different strokes. So all of a sudden, you have this very popular character, especially when you recorded this in 87. And now she's in this full-motion video game. And then, like, this is the game that just kind of refused to go away. It was just constantly in the headlines. Oh, here you go. Now it gets intense.
Yeah.
So next probably 12 minutes or so, it's like this. So I thought they did a really good job of the pacing. But also it's amazing to consider like how much happens in one evening in such a short period of time. right between the girls going out, they're going to see the boathouse. They come back in, they have a party. They go upstairs. One of them decides to go get changed. The little boy Danny is finding this crazy auger gun. Save Danny. Oh, he escapes at the back.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised that YouTube hasn't tried to make an interface to make this playable on YouTube itself.
You know that that Joe Redifer from GameStack made his own like choose your own adventure. It's like his personal YouTube channel. It's also on the Blu-ray too, where you can. Oh, she's explaining it. Gotta listen to me. I think these might be vampires who against here. It's like so matter of fact.
You know, it's always funny when characters in a horror movie like call things what they are. Like, you know, in a zombie movie, it's so rare for anyone to say the Z word, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, there's no self-awareness.
What is this thing?
Yeah.
It's like zombie movies don't exist in their world.
Right, right. Like, oh, they're walkers or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked for Joe Redifer, Choose Your Adventure. Couldn't find it, but I did find a lot of his other stuff. It's interesting because I run into so many forum posts that he had from, like, decades ago.
Yeah, like on Sega 16.
Different games. That's great. But it's interesting. Like when, I guess like there's only so much room for like retro gaming and old gamers. You kind of bump into a lot of these people over and over.
Yeah, definitely.
Because yeah, I think a lot of the people who grew up playing these games kind of got out of it, right? For whatever reason.
I think a lot of people are getting back into it though.
Yeah, especially as things become more accessible now. You have good old games or games getting ported and stuff. I mean, even Sherlock Holmes, which is another FMV game on Sega CD and countless others, was ported about 2-3 years ago on a mobile. So I was actually going to reach out to that team a couple weeks ago to say, how did you guys do this? So I could try to emulate that somehow on with Night Trap. Oh, launch that guy from the roof. So now it's getting intense for you. This is the interesting part.
Yeah, I'm going to save her, though. I can actually kill her.
Do you ever find out what the augers are and where
they're
come from?
Just like half living vampires.
Vampires.
Well, why are they here?
I guess like the so apparently the parents or these family like goes and feeds these augers, these vampires. And I guess they just decide to come to the house on this evening for whatever reason. So typically they don't come. And even at a point you couldn't hear because we're having a conversation, the mother makes a reference and says, oh, your father and I are going to pay a visit to the Oggs tonight. And you're thinking the Oggs are like a family. That's like a Friday night, they're going to have a drink. And later on you're like, oh, she meant we're going to visit them. So they have like blood popsicles and whatever else vampires eat. I guess vampires eat blood popsicles. But also, I always try to picture in my head, like, what do these traps look like? Is that just like a giant slip and slide?
I know. It's like, it seems like it's carpet. You would not, like, slide down it.
Yeah.
But so did. So obviously, the parents are aware of them. Did they install the traps in the house?
The parents did, yes. To catch visitors and guests. So I think that's how your SWAT, Special Forces team, whatever, SCAT. Special control attack team.
No, the Sega control attack team in this one.
Oh yeah, at least in the Sega. Also Tony has lightning bolts from his hands. They never explained that either. And he can change his eyes. So they install these traps and invite girls over to catch them. No, Tony. to catch them different times.
I like how there's like different angles I was just watching that scene
it's just
on
the
balcony
scene like a movie
and like it pans down but yeah you're like I mean, you sometimes see that in movies too, like, you know, and you're like, wait, what? Like, where?
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're supposed to be looking at something that, you know, someone shot or something was recorded on a security camera, and there's like some sort of like cool movement or it follows something. You're like, what? No.
Yeah.
Can't think of an example off the top of my head, but I've seen it like not even that long ago.
You're like, so how did this happen? Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Things are getting really intense now. You see on the second floor.
That in the hallway looks so weird to me.
Because it's so long?
I don't know. Like, there's just, like, it looks very movie set-ish.
Yeah, well, it all does.
Fake really. Movie set-ish. I mean, especially that hallway, though.
And there's like an extra, like if you beat the game or lose or something, I forgot where I saw this, where you see all the cast actually come out together and like run back and forth across the scene, like the production crew.
Now, I've seen that one, like a whole bunch where like the dresser pops out and the bed flips the guy out. Like, has that trap been triggered multiple times within the same run?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, or I mean, yeah, okay. It happens. They all happen like multiple times.
Okay, and it's the same recording, but technically a different auger. A vampire victim
who's been half bled and yeah, exactly. Or often it is the same recording they'll reuse. So some of those things they had to actually put on, which they put back into the game itself. Because there's only so much room in the disc, so they had to kind of reuse a lot of what they're doing.
Right. Vampires. You gotta be jabbing me. Let's cuff these freaks and drag them
down. Hold it. I don't think you understand, Mr. Martin. But you're in serious. I don't think you understand, Mr. Martin.
Oh, I that's right. I can't lose at this point, right?
No, you can.
But he's like there.
Yep, that's fine.
He can pull the plug on you even if you get to this point.
Control got him with the stair trap.
Control.
So you've got to catch the dad.
Right.
Is it going?
Well, I mean, that's it. It's like karate moves in slow motion.
Wait, yeah. So the dad is a bad guy?
Yeah, he's a vampire. Oh, yeah. Look at him. Watch him do his moves.
He just takes shotgun blasts like it ain't no thing.
Your bullets cannot hurt me.
It's like, oh, we probably should look into this first.
Oh, and she also dies too. It's like the entire scat team like is dead.
Yeah. Away. What are we going to do with the others? Don't worry about them. Now let's go
and get that phony. Right. She just grabs his forehead and like pushes him down.
Yeah. Get him. Nice. Corey, lighten this game up.
Well, I'm just using it.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. And then I'll wait until the game's over and I'll explain something.
Yeah, because it's almost over here.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I distinctly remember my heart, like, racing the first few times I got this far. I was like, and you can get a perfect, too. There's actually a different ending if you get a perfect.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yep. Yeah, again, like, this isn't as difficult as you think it is. Like, Dracula Unleashed, which I highly recommend. That, to get that correctly without having any sort of FAQ is brutally difficult. Because there's often not hints as to how things happen. But this, like, you can just kind of figure it out along the way. The wall trap. I was going to tell you about that one. It was going to be a surprise. And she just sits there like, whoops.
My whole family is dead.
Yeah, it makes you think, like, do those things kill them? And do they really want to kill people? I think they want to drain them for their blood. So, like,
should we kill her? Should we kill Kelly?
No, that's what I was going to say. You can actually trap her.
The wall trap. No.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it just because it's funny. Or maybe not. Oh. I thought that maybe it doesn't give you the opportunity to...
No, no. You catch the daughter, Sarah, first, and then if you win the game, and then after you win, you can catch Janet Plato.
And it's like, that's it. It's like, you did a really good job. Thanks. Our entire team is dead. But you did a good job.
So you can catch her right here.
Yeah, I somehow missed it. I tried to.
But there's an auger coming from the back.
Uh-oh. The Framemeister drop. Yeah. Oh, that was the end.
Yep, yeah. No, it wasn't.
If you get it perfect, you get a slightly different ending. Where she acknowledges the fact that you got perfect.
Yeah.
But pretty cool, right? I mean, that's...
It's an awesome
game. For what that was the time, that was like absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I can see why.
It kind of like led the way for full motion video games, which never took off the way they should have.
Right, like at the time, it was pretty much Dragon's Lair.
Largely a hardware limitation, cost. There was a lot. The gameplay you see is kind of sparse compared to other games. But if you choose your own adventure, and if you understand what you're getting, right, you're getting an interactive visualization, then you'll like it.
Yeah, I mean, I it probably sounds weird to a lot of people, especially, you know, people who are used to, you know, exclusively used to modern games, but I like repetition. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the experience of, you know, you game over and you try it again and, you know, you learn the game. You just feel like you've kind of, like, gotten...
You've conquered this.
Yeah, and you've just gotten to know the flow of the game and everything about it so much more than, you know, you get checkpoints and save points all the time and you get to the end and it's over. And in a lot of ways, you forget more about the game, with those modern niceties.
Right. And you're thinking like, it's kind of like the sense that you can like dominate this game and whatever it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, and then it's fun to just play it again and just do awesome.
Yeah.
Because you know what you're doing.
I'm going to, like, since we have a few more minutes left before the post-stream just kind of discussion, I'm going to just throw in another full motion video game. It's going to be a surprise.
Oh.
I'll be right back.
Oh, here we go. Super secret. I like it.
There's, according to the episode on the Wolf Team FMV games.
I know, I saw that. I love that.
He, I think that's one of his least favorite episodes, but I loved it. I thought it was definitely. Fun.
It's funny. I think he
didn't like those games as much as some of the other Wolf Team games, though.
I know. So I was actually going through and playing some of my older games today, too. And I stumbled across some of the Wolf Team games. The first one was a driving one. Trailing for Wolf Team games, Sega CD. So Soul Feast, I have that. I was playing that the other day. I thought there was a driving game.
That does sound familiar.
Actually, if you type in Wolf Team Sega CD, you guys are the third result.
Man,
Time Gal. That's what I was thinking of. Time Gal, Road Avenger.
It would. I almost did Road Avenger, but I decided to do an actual live action one.
So, you notice the Sega CD BIOS? You have a version 1.1. They all are all very different. They have like a very different intro and music behind it too.
I can if you have an EverDrive, you can load the BIOS from like other versions.
Oh, onto I it. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. Power Rangers, all right.
This one's full screen, full motion video.
Yeah. This was the, very much QTEs, quick time events. So, you know, we can thank these kinds of games for making quick time events. So it wasn't actually Shenmue that started, I'll have you know. have you played Wirehead before?
I'm familiar with it.
very, very similar game. Just like basically a series of QTEs. So that, try to answer your question before about branching paths, that will be very different. Like you can make decisions. Do I go left? Do I go right? And that'll play out different results for you later on, you know, in Wirehead. So Power Rangers.
When did you get this?
This one?
How long did you have this? Yeah.
My friend Ricky had like an extra copy of it.
Oh, okay. So have you really played it before?
No, it does make an appearance in the Wolf Team episode, though, for like a split second.
I don't remember it.
David Yost. But yeah, it's basically one episode that you're playing as. I actually still follow the Green Ranger on Twitter. Jason David Frank. He's always had like all the Comic-Con things I go to.
Yeah, I know very little about Power Rangers, and like it was like I was like right on like the borderline age.
Yeah.
Like where, you know, like some of my friends got into it and some of my friends didn't get into it and I didn't get into it, but
yeah, I was like, never into it either.
In retrospect, like, I mean, I have not, like, gotten back and gotten, you know, watched anything. But, like, looking at it just as a distant observer, like, I can kind of see, like, where some of the fun is. Like, it's, you know, just kind of silly. But,
I mean, considering that, like, as big of a Godzilla fan as I was, I mean, this didn't start showing in the U.S. until, like, I was already, like, in the high school. So it was just, like, didn't really do much for me.
Yeah, it's interesting to note that all the fighting scenes are Japanese.
Right.
All of the characters you're actually seeing speaking are just the American scenes.
Really? So all of the fighting scenes are just completely... They don't even reach
from the Japan part. Yep, just
really?
It's like it looks like they filmed a lot for America, but like it's just the drama.
Huh.
And this is I think, as far as I know, that this is like exclusive to the Sega CD. Like they're not just like taking this from other episodes. Like this is like,
so this footage is new. Yep,
it's like specifically made for this game.
Yeah, like that idea is cool to me, you know, but they would go back and do some of this and say, yeah, let's make this for a console. Plus, I would love to be idolized on a Sega CD forever, so.
So was there an equivalent game in Japan?
Not that I'm aware of. Like you're saying, so I mean, I should say, like, so the fighting scenes in the Power Rangers show, right, is that what you're talking about? Those were all...
Those were Japanese, and they just reshot
the drama
scenes. But
well, like this is like
my question is: was there was there a Super Sentai Mega CD game that was this same game?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Dave, I don't know how Sega CD did in Japan, to tell you the truth.
Well, the Sega Genesis was... I mean, the Saturn was Sega's most popular system in Japan.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is kind of crazy to think about because it absolutely was not here.
I mean, they just launched it like such a half-run attempt over here.
And, like, I didn't know until relatively recently, and I don't know the specifics of how well it sold, but you know, I guess Mega Drive was not that big of a deal in Japan, especially at least compared to here, where it was like a huge deal.
Yeah, thanks to Tom, what's his name? Their awesome American marketing at Sega. Yeah, very different world. Yeah, it's just interesting to see how the different platforms, you know, work in different countries, and even if, like,
I think the PC Engine did better than the Mega Drive.
Right.
Yep. And we're here in the States, like, we had nothing on PC, we have TurboGrafx here, we had nothing. But even that, like, I can't get that damn thing to work correctly, or I should say, get an easy solution for a FrameMeister with that, because it only spits out composite, or RF.
believe us, that's stuff we need to be looking into.
I'm going to Redmond, where our Microsoft office is, in 2 weeks for work, And we have a garage there, and the garage is like the hackathon residence where people are there like all day and night just working on personal projects that Microsoft provided the tools for. So I might go to clear my hardware, because we have a lot of hardware engineers there too, and say, you know, can you help me solder this on or cut this circuit?
Yeah.
I've already seen the wiring diagrams. I'm like, if anyone's going to know, it's going to be these rocket scientists.
Yeah.
Here. I just don't have the tools anymore. So I'm like,
I don't know if you need like a particular part for the turbo.
Yeah, I looked up a couple weeks ago and I was like, I'm not doing this in my own.
There are external solutions that you can plug into the CD thing, but then you can't use the CD.
And that was my concern. I'm like, oh, that sucks. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, your videos were so helpful, but it's incredible to see how different the display standards were in different parts of the world and how forward-thinking some consoles were.
Yeah.
We're kind of continuously amazed at, like, the people that have, like, seen our videos. Like, we just, like, did a... like, we're doing a GameCube video, and it went to somebody at Insomniac Games, which is kind of cool.
Oh, no way. Yeah, that's awesome. Imagine, like, the people making games now grew up playing all the stuff that you're writing, making these videos about, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're in your mid-30s and leading a studio...
Do I hit all three of them? Or I just mash my buttons? I don't know what I'm supposed to do there.
Yeah, I never said that either. It's like, just bash stuff.
Yeah, the U.S. TurboGrafx is, you know, I don't have any history or personal attachment to it. I never even heard of it, like, during its day. Never heard of it. Never knew anyone with one or anything. But, you know, so I say that as a disclaimer, but I think it's a really dumb-looking console.
The Turbo?
Yeah. I think it's, like, maybe the dumbest-looking console.
Yeah. It's too bad because, like, the Japanese version is so cool-looking.
I love, I wish that you know, the Turbo Duo wasn't, like, the obvious one to buy, because I love how just the plain PC engine looks. It's just this little tiny thing.
Yep.
I just love it. I think it's I think it's one of the coolest looking things. But
yeah, definitely.
The Turbo graphics is stupid looking. There's no logic to that T shape. It's so dumb.
Looks like that's like a big butt sticking out of the back of it. Even like, you know, apply your CD.
I really do like the idea of, like, games on little cards, though. That's just kind of cool. Yeah.
Corey dominating the first stage. So actually, here's something I thought about doing recently. We get to dedicate a large portion of our time at work to, like, personal projects and hackathons and things. And what I wanted to do next was kind of do what the Game Genie did, but rather than change the data values going across, I actually want to export it to the cloud and make a leaderboard for games. So essentially the way Game Genie worked is I got a Genesis, right? The Genesis would read the data from the cart and then just store it in the RAM inside of the Genesis itself. And that's how you keep score and things like that. So you can change those values, and that's the Game Genie did. That's why it sat between the cart and the console itself. All right. So you can grab those values. So what I want to do is grab those values, use a little Raspberry Pi, send them to a cloud, and this way I'd have an actual leaderboard that people could push to their games. So now you can go to, like, you know, your website and see, hey, what was your last score in Wing Commander 3 on 3DO? That's a dream project. I've seen all these leaderboards, because I see there's one inside this game. But then I'm like, really? Like, who are you competing against? It's just you.
Yeah. Could you do that with, like, an actual? You know, I've seen that there are, like, cartridge adapters that you can get to, like, connect to a, you know, emulator system or a Raspberry Pi or whatever.
Yep.
Could you pull that from an actual something stored on an actual cart that way?
So you can dump, you know, the data from the cart. Yes, that's one way of doing it. But if you want to do it, like, in live, real time, you could do that as well. Just as, like, the Game Genie changes those values on the fly to say, like, hey, flip this bit to give this person 99 lives instead of 0. You could grab that, and as soon as this Raspberry Pi sees that value change, it can then connect to the internet, push it to a website, and say, hey, just change this value. So now you'd see, hey, here's what someone's actual score is on a leaderboard in real time. Things like the NES actually exports data, I don't know why, from the gamepad port. So if you were to plug something into the gamepad, second gamepad port, you can actually get information about the game from there.
Look at this.
3DO has an expansion port. So all these game consoles have expansion ports that you can grab all this data from too. So it's pretty cool.
You take care of Goldar. I'll try to locate Zordon.
Aye. Tyrannosaurus.
I know they're all like dinosaurs except for Sabertooth Tiger. Doesn't fit.
And then you're like, what the hell? That's like really Sabertooth? It's like a T-Rex is gonna dominate that thing. Yeah, I mean, looking on YouTube, like the footage just seems so much clearer than I think what we do actually view on a Sega CD.
Of course, you're playing on your PVM right now. Right?
Yeah. I'm pretty much like, if anything is 240p, it's just like the way my setup is now, it's like I'm almost exclusively playing on my PVM lately.
Right. Well, I mean, your setup is just like perfect that you can just like turn to whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, your setup is definitely the way to do it.
Well, the setup that you saw in like the 102 is like completely different now. Like, I have a house now, nice. So it's like completely.
Yeah, we keep saying like we need to do like a new like setup slash game room slash studio tour video.
Yeah, I think we're gonna like maybe March we'll do that.
Yeah, we keep saying.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we would do it at the end of February, but it seems like it might be hard before.
Yeah, we've kind of got February.
Yeah.
And to an extent, Mark sort of planned out.
Well, you should tell about the events that happened yesterday that we only tweeted about it, but people might not know.
Yeah. Our MAGFest, the panel, our MAGFest panel was approved.
Yeah, so we will be doing an RGB panel at MAGFest.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's kind of nuts. So if anyone's going to MAGFest, show of hands. Who's going to MAGFest? I mean, you know, we were obviously going to be there regardless, but I was honestly kind of losing hope. I was not optimistic anymore that we were going to get our panel there.
Yeah, I love that place.
So yeah, are you going this year?
No. I've got another event. I've got to be at work. I have to split an area with my coworker. She's giving a talk at MAGFest, so she gets to go.
Ah.
So now I know to submit a talk for next year. Yeah, well, because when I found out that we had two events, I was like, no. Do you know who the big musical guest is this year?
I did
musical
no idea.
This year or 2 years ago.
Grant Kirkhope's the only one that I remember.
Okay.
I know I've looked at the list, but he was the one that jumped out at me anyway.
Bowling out with the Green Knight.
Mellow Gaming wants another live stream of us sorting out cables. I actually linked someone.
I saw that like in the private messages you saw.
Yeah, because I was like, well, you know, this might be helpful because I was actually doing exactly what you're talking about doing, which was routing everything through a PVM and a FrameMeister.
Oh, right. Where do we know where to find a? Service manual for a PVM 2030, not off the top of my head. I mean, there's one site where I found the service manual for mine, for my 205L, but I mean, that was a while ago.
You know, someone asked in a comment on a video, they were asking what, I guess it was on 104, they were asking what Phone Dork put in the back of the PVM? Like, what you actually call those? Because he said he wanted one, but he couldn't. He had no idea what to search for.
Sure.
And I didn't know how to answer it.
I'll catch you later.
Didn't know how to search for it. Find the service manual?
He didn't know the expansion card that you put inside a PVM.
Oh, right. The one that Phone Dork has.
He said, I don't know. Like, he said, I have a screen that, you know, can support expansion cards like that, but right. I don't even know what to call it to search for.
Right. I mean, mine are called options. Like, I can put one options. Card in mine. I mean, if you need, like, if he's looking for a specific one, then it'd probably be best to, like, message him, but, I mean, I'll leave him, I'll reply to his comment tomorrow. I remember seeing it. I mean, I learned that what expansion card I needed for mine by his videos. It's like a BKM 102 or something. That adds another,
So you can do component.
Right, just adds another set of RGB.
I really wish... I don't think I have the option to do that on mine.
Right, the littler ones don't have it.
Yeah, I wish I had it, because I would like to be able to put component into it.
So what did one of those go for, the PVM?
It depends.
I got mine for $150.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's awesome.
And really, the shipping was only like...
It was like 50.
It was only like $23 or something.
Right.
Wow.
Which is like kind of way, I think, lower than you could generally hope to find it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably going to be.
It's heavy.
Yeah. I mean, it's only 14 inch?
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't bother you, like, playing games with a small monitor?
Well,
I'm playing this on a 20 inch PVM, which is, like, actually really great for retro games, I think. I think that's like...
It's just like you're right up there.
And you're close to it anyway. Like,
yeah, there's something to be said about playing retro games on like a 14-inch PVM, like sitting on the floor, sitting in front of it, you know?
Like, the way mine is, here, I'll make an attempt at showing how it's set up with my webcam. You know, you can see that the PVM is kind of just off to the side there.
You kind of sit on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's my main TV. So, like, if I do use it, like, I would need to sit on the floor, or I've got a beanbag that I can bring in here.
God,
but, like, so where I'm sitting, no, it would not really be very good. But, like, I haven't used it a lot for, like, regular play yet. But... You know, I mean, I might use it a little bit for fun. Like, I used it a lot when I was doing the Famicom 3D episode. Yeah. You know, and for shorter play sessions like that, it wasn't, you know, uncomfortable to sit on the floor. I mean, there is sort of a fun, nostalgic...
It's like you're a kid again.
...aspect of, you know, sitting on the floor right in front of a CRT. I mean, there is a fun feeling to that. So in that sense, it's not necessarily in a bad spot. But really, like, where it is, like, it's kind of just good. It's really good for just getting, like, those off-screen shots that we like to get for our videos.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's like the main thing I wanted it for, really, was more for getting video shots, more so than really just everyday use. I mean, you know, if I'm playing a game, you know, I am going to be playing it, you know, most of the time through the FrameMeister on my TV.
Yeah,
but everything goes through a switcher to the PVM, out of the PVM, and into the FrameMeister, and seems to really not lose any quality.
Oh, wow,
it's kind of amazing.
So go and then from the FrameMeister into however you're recording it or your TV.
It splits out of there to the TV and then to the capture card. Yeah, so like this whole crazy setup just spans the entire room.
It's like you can play anything on your PVM if you wanted to, or you can play it through your large TV.
Right, exactly. So everything goes to the PVM. Like the PVM doesn't even have to be on for
it's just pass through.
It's purely pass through.
Because those old monitors, the PVMs have like pass through whether or not they're even on, turn on or not.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Actually, I have two PVMs like chained together. Like one of them. It goes out and then into my other one. it's like kind of. When we do the episode, you'll see.
But Yeah, so every, like all of the RGB systems go to the PPM. Like, everything can be displayed on the PVM, my HDTV, and my capture card all at once.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, right, yeah, you got the ultimate setup there.
Yeah. Corey's is definitely a little crazier than mine and how it's all chained together. But, I mean, I'm proud of what I got going on here, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm running out of space. I need to figure something out. I just start building more shelves for consoles.
Yeah, my biggest challenge is I've got this thing going where I have to have all of my systems like in chronological order. Like
that's great.
I haven't divided up by company, so like
Nintendo on one side.
A lot of my systems are upstairs right now because I was showing my shoes. A lot of my systems are upstairs right now, because I was shooting for next week's video. But you know, like the Nintendo stuff, chronological order on the bottom. Sony stuff, chronological order on the top.
Cool.
And then over here, the Genesis is
awesome cabinets too.
Yeah, it's just IKEA.
Oh wow, yeah, it came out really well.
But then the Genesis, you know, Genesis, Saturn, Dreamcast, yeah. So I have to have that all set up like that.
Yeah, you got quite the setup. Yeah, I definitely need more shelving, at least to hold games and cases. And
yeah, over here, these aren't really set. That's my Japanese ColecoVision. And the ColecoVision and the Atari, they aren't actually hooked up right now. They're just kind of there for show. And then the Xbox, over there is where my Microsoft consoles will go.
Cabling. Holy cow.
Yeah, there's this big...
oh man,
this is right behind my
have an incredibly loving wife. Oh, you have your computer there too.
This is
you have the best setup I've ever seen.
That's there. There's mixer, HDMI switcher,
optical,
and then this big pile of cables that's just like,
but at least you keep it neat and orderly.
Yeah, well, that's a relatively
debatable
new development.
That's after. I'm just gonna that's gonna be the end of the actual gameplay. But maybe I
beat the game already, huh?
No, I'm on episode 5.
Oh,
but I'm not gonna play it anymore. Just kind of and wrap it up.
Cool. Yeah, good time was had by all.
Yeah, it was a good time. I haven't, it's been forever since I played Night Trappist. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know what it is? It's like events like this where you get together with friends that you have an excuse to go back and play a lot of these old games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I have three friends locally who I do it with too. How about you guys?
Yeah, I mean that's I think a big appeal of streaming is it just gives you an excuse to do something that you if you were just sitting there by yourself, it's like, why would I do this? But you know, if you can make an event out of it, it's like,
And that's why I just started recording stuff too. I kind of took the habit from you guys, and I'm like, it's not fun if I'm talking to myself. And then seeing how many people comment on things, I'm like, wow, there's actually people who do care about these things.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's just like conversation too. You know, we can.
Yeah.
Like there's a ton of information you like told us about like in this episode or tonight's stream. It's cool. Like learning all that stuff.
You guys are very knowledgeable. So you can help other people out to kind of teach them from there.
That'd be cool. Like maybe I'll talk to you in the future about, see if you can put me in contact with some of these people so I can maybe do an episode. I don't know if you ever saw the missed episode that Tri did.
I didn't.
Where he went and interviewed the
co-creator.
Yeah, the co-creator of Myst.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, you should check it out. He went to their offices and stuff and looked at their new game. Kind of went through all the games of the series that he did.
Yeah, they it was cool how it worked out. We were Me and my parents went on vacation this summer to the West Coast, basically. And we were going through Washington. I just thought, is there something productive I could do for the channel while I was out there?
Yeah.
And for some reason, I'm historically not a big PC gamer, but the Myst series was one of the PC series that captured my attention. Mm-hmm. Back in the day. And for some reason, Cyan, they're in Spokane, Washington, or near Spokane, Washington.
Oh,
and
okay.
For some reason, that's what popped in my head. So I sent them an email, and it just worked out. So it was really cool. And just made like a whole episode about sort of combining his history with the industry and what got him into it and what, you know, his ideas. And, you know, I sort of tried to treat it like, you know, sort of like a shared experience of what Myst was from a creator's perspective. And then from, you know, a player's perspective.
Right.
You know, and how that and the logic behind the design. And, you know, it's sort of you know, love it or hate it series.
Definitely.
So in that respect, I wasn't really sure how well it would do, but we wanted to have that video out there so that kind of becomes our, you know, example of, you know, this is what we can do, you know. Yep. We obviously don't really live near a lot of opportunities, but we would love to have a chance, you know, if we could someday, you know, schedule like a bunch of people, you know, in the span of like a week, you know, we could plan like a trip to LA or something, and we could come back with like interviews with you know, seven or eight people, you know. And have lots of material for episodes, because that's kind of from, I think, the beginning, sort of what our ideas were. Not necessarily talking to creators, but it wasn't just about like us talking about our life in gaming. It was supposed to be, you know, getting input from other people and stuff. It's just that, you know, we haven't had a lot of opportunities to do that. But I think that we can really make some you know, highlight episodes, you know, when we can have someone else's input to, you know, sprinkle in their comments alongside what, you know, our story is.
Right. Yeah. Especially because like they were the creators behind his content. So you get a lot of the behind the scenes that people typically wouldn't know.
Yeah. So it was, it was fun, and we really want to do some more like that. So like Corey said, you know, if somehow or other we could get together like people that worked on Night Trap, like, oh my gosh, that would be an unbelievable episode.
Yeah, like a little dream team project.
Yeah, absolutely. We would love to do things like that. Like if we had the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a miracle you can like find people who worked on a lot of this stuff, because I think games back then were so small and kind of insignificant compared to what the industry is now.
Right.
So you see a lot of people who worked on it like left shortly or immediately after. Hell, I mean, you've played Star Fox, obviously. The composer behind that was his first and only game. He did that and said, I'm done with games.
The original Star Fox.
Yes.
That's about
6 months ago.
It's an amazing soundtrack.
Hiawasa Tsuramari. Hiawasa
That's hard.
And, I looked him up. Yep. And sure enough, he has his own like sound composing company, but they make it for like film and stuff. And I read somewhere he's just like, nah, done with games. Huh. I'm like, what? That soundtrack was incredible.
Yeah.
Man, I said, you just went off on like a swan song and just said, nah, I'm done with this. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, that's what games were back then, right? And even today, like, if you stay around in games for 5-10 years, like, you're a veteran, because it just really doesn't pay well. It's cutthroat. People can often make a better living in other industries. They kind of start off here and then say, psh, okay, I'm on to the next thing. Yeah. Oh, well, it is what it is. I see Corey engaging heavily in the chat over there.
Yeah, sorry. I just, like, realized that there's people that are local.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
That's
well.
Funny.
So one of you is in North Carolina. The other one's in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, I'm technically in Kentucky. I'm like right across the river from Cincinnati. It's like downtown Cincinnati is like a 10-minute walk from my doorstep.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was I had to go give a talk at a university in Ohio like 2 or 3 months ago. Shawnee State, great game development program over there.
Really?
And I had to go into Kentucky. And go across the river into Ohio. And I didn't realize how close those two were. But yeah, I'm sure they'd love to have you come down and even talk to them about gamings and game development and stuff there too.
For those that don't know, you're a tech evangelist, right? Is that what it's called?
Yep, that's it. That weird title.
Yeah. Which means you just go and you talk to people who are like learning the code and stuff.
Yeah. Or... So startups and often students, and I work with them to make games or websites and web tools. Yeah, so that's my job. So basically work on games and help people to make games.
You've had kind of an interesting like path to get there too.
Construction worker turned game developer. That was it. I didn't go to school for computer science. I just learned to code from YouTube and free books.
So you basically just kind of do your own projects to keep sharp and then just talk to other people about it.
That's it. And that's what that Night Trap thing was me saying like, hey, here's the cutting edge tech that you can do on the web. I want it to work on every platform, and just to show you that I don't care what you write it for, because in the end, the more technology that everyone uses and creates, the better it is for everybody, because at some point they will use a Microsoft tool. Like I use a MacBook Pro and an iPhone, but I'm still using Microsoft technology there. So in the end, you're going to have to use one part of our platform. So the more you're making, the better. So it's cool. People think, oh, you're going to hate their stuff. I'm like, no, I love Apple stuff. I have my whole desk is littered with it.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, you can't really – it's more difficult to, like, play favorites, I think, at this point.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why I have it all. Like, my desktop is a Windows 10 machine, but my laptop is a MacBook Pro. So I get the best of both worlds.
And Dave and I met over a game of Final Fight. Then we started talking about the Sega CD.
Yeah. It was that when Polygon had just started or just about to roll out.
Yeah.
I think they're still part of like Vox. They're still Vox, but I think they were part of like This Is My Next or whatever it was at that point. And they had like a meeting in Williamsburg, Brooklyn at Barcade, right?
Yep.
And so we went there. We were both playing Final Fight, Mayor Hagar. Yeah. And then we kind of just hit it off from there because we were both living in New York at the time.
Right.
And I was working in Williamsburg. And then now neither of us are in that area. I'm in Philadelphia and you're in Ohio or Cincinnati.
Yeah. It's just funny how, like, just like a moment. Me just saying, like, you know, my favorite version of Final Fight is the Sega CD version. That's like when.
That's so random, too.
I know. But I mean, you're at like a gathering like that. You can kind of say stuff about, like, random games, and you never know like what kind of response you'd get.
I think Sega people like bond more easily.
I could see that.
Yeah, exactly. And then you realize like, wow, if you even like knew what this thing was, I mean, because like if I bring up Sega CD to like most of my, we'll say like common folk, non, you know, old school gamer friends, they say, I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
I played the Marios when I was a kid. I'm like, yeah, it's great. I love the Sonics and the Marios. But it's a Sega CD and someone like brings up the name of a game. I'm like, what? It's like, well, let's be friends. And even better if they have a 32X or knew what one of those were.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard of the PSX? Yep, PSX is not actually the PlayStation. A lot of people think it's...
Well, it was originally like the nickname for the PlayStation.
Right, 1. And later on it became
then they
PS...
released the real.
Yeah.
Right, but he may be talking about the PSX that was like a PS2 that has like extra functionality. Some people mentioned it like a thing that we should have... or could have covered in the PS1 RGB episode. I think the biggest thing that I regret not looking into for that one was the
LCD screen.
The LCD screen, yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot of comments.
Yeah, I think that like the thing that I like about that episode is it's all things that are within reach. Like they are all like the common things that you can get for PlayStation to, and you know, these are, you know, without getting like some obscure revision or obscure Japanese only thing, you know, this is like, these are all of the main PlayStation systems. Here's what you can do with them.
Right.
We never said the word mod or modification in that episode,
which is rare.
Yet,
yeah,
exactly. And yet there's still so much, so many crazy details.
Yeah. Maybe somebody in the chat would know. It's like, we got like a huge bump in like views on that and like subscribers yesterday, like starting like last night or the night before last, maybe like Friday night.
Can you see the click-throughs on your site?
Yeah, you can see like the real time, like it updates like every 10 seconds.
Oh, but it doesn't tell you like where it's coming from though?
Well, you can kind of, after several days, you can figure out where some things are coming from.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
But if anybody could like enlighten us, if anybody in the chat is...
Who's been giving us all this traffic? Like, basically, how did you find out about this, you know?
Yeah.
Now, for anyone who missed it when we said so earlier, we are doing a MAGFest panel. If we can get around to doing it, we should make like a announcement video, actually, like properly saying we're going to be at MAGFest.
We'll do it. After we
get back from G Anime. For anyone who forgot, we're also going to G Anime
on Thursday.
On Thursday, we're flying out there Thursday. The convention starts, I guess, Friday. We'll be there Friday and Saturday officially. So that's exciting. It's kind of cool because we're going into like a little mini convention season here.
Yeah, no idea what to expect next week.
Yeah, so,
or this coming weekend.
So yeah, so I mean, we're going to be doing stuff at G Anime. We've officially got a panel at MAGFest. Did we ever officially announce that we are going to be participating in, I think the official title is Mega Manathon?
Yeah, we're going to be playing.
What's that?
It's like MAGFest, like a live stream for charity where they play like all these Mega Man games like all the entire weekend long. Mm-hmm. They get different people to play.
It's been there every single MAGFest we've been to.
This is the fourth one.
Yeah, so it started the first year we went.
Right.
Okay, so so they play like all the games, and we committed to playing Mega Man X2.
Yeah,
which so good.
People might think is kind of an odd choice, but the all of like the original series except for 10, I think everything but 3 and 10 had been claimed, and I'm like, well, 3's too hard. and 10, I was going to do 10, but then on the backloggery, I ended up getting a commitment for doing a Mega Man marathon there in March, where me and Drumble are going to play through all of the games and compete to get through all of the original series games, one through 10, possibly skipping 7 and/or 8, because neither of us have 8. but yeah, so then I was like, well, I'm not allowed to practice those games anymore, so 10's out, so that it went back to X2, so.
Which I haven't played since it came out.
I like X2.
Yeah, we're gonna do some we're gonna do some bonus streams of us, like, we have a way that we can put both of our gameplay on screen at once, and we'll probably do like a practice stream
awesome.
Or something where we'll just both be playing.
I've only beaten X2 once or twice, but I like it a lot. Like I feel like, because I wasn't into Mega Man until after Mega Man X came out, I wasn't, you know, there, so to speak, to be blown away by how awesome X was. So in my mind, I kind of look at, I feel like I don't have like this huge nostalgia thing for the original X. So I feel like I can look at X and X2 a little more objectively, so I look at them, I'm like, yeah, they're both pretty good. Maybe after this, I'll decide that, yeah, okay, X2 isn't as good as the original X, but for now, I like it just as much. I do think X3 is not quite as good, and X4 is kind of just, They,
X4 has an excellent soundtrack. Yeah,
and then X5 and X6 are atrocious.
Yeah, very, very different games. Well, I mean, like,
they're
for X1, yeah. And X1 stood out because it was so different from everything else we've been giving up to that point.
Right.
And you can, like, go back to stages and, you know, like, if you beat Chill Penguin,
about, like,
now
like finding,
lava
like,
stage
the hidden
is
stuff.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, things you do affect the rest of the game.
Right. Yeah, I always love that, that, you know, like, beating certain bosses will, like, change the stages of the other ones.
Yep.
But yeah, we're going to be doing the Mega Man marathon. That'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be pretty neat at MAGFest. And also G-Anime. We're going to be... We won't be, like, recording our panel or anything at that, like, at G-Anime, because it's just, like, too much of a hassle.
We can't fly with our equipment, really.
Well, even if we were flying with our equipment, we wouldn't want to, like, it'd be even more of a hassle to fly internationally with our equipment, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I'm driving to MAGFest, so I can bring my tripod and everything, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be a lot easier to bring equipment to MAGFest, but yeah, G-Anime, we're going to try to travel light.
Yeah. We're going to try and shoot, like, some vlogs or something like that.
Yeah, we're going to try, like, just shoot something, like, on our phone, like, you know, it's like a vlog, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you guys got to record it for the folks like myself who can't be there.
Well, hopefully the MAGFest one will definitely do it. Yeah. And not only that, but we have it in scripting stages. We're going to be doing a... it's like not going to like take the place of our videos or anything like that week's video or something.
Yeah, it's not even going to be like a regular episode. Like, it's not even going to have the intro on.
It's like, hey, we're here, so we might as well do it.
Well, no. We're doing like an RGB 100 episode, which is just kind of like the first episode for the playlist, where it kind of says, all right, here's what this is all about. So that people starting into it can like kind of see what the series entails.
Right. So sort of the thinking behind that episode, or, you know, again, it's not really a proper episode, but the thinking behind that originally was, you know, after our experience doing a panel at Too Many Games, which I think went fine, but we learned a lot from it. And that was when we decided, okay, what we're going to do for panels going forward, we're going to play like a 5-minute, like, introductory RGB video that's like, here's what this is, here's the basics, here's why it's cool, here's why you should be interested in, you know, blah, blah. And, you know, so just go over really basically so that people at the panel who, you know, so that we get everyone kind of on a level playing field, or maybe not level playing field, but at least everyone's got, like, a good starting point, and then we can just open it up to discussion.
Sorry, guys. Oh. We're back. Hang on.
Okay, and he's dropping again. I blame
I'm back.
Insert ISP.
No, it's seriously, my internet drops for like a split second every night at 11:30.
So we got in the streams before 11:30.
Right. But it happens like right on the dot. I have no idea why it happens. But It's bizarre. But luckily, like YouTube, it doesn't like create a new file. It just resumes from the streaming, so it doesn't.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh, someone just said it must be 11:30.
Someone.
Yeah, and it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you saying about Too Many Games, Dave?
Oh, are you guys going to Too Many Games Festival this year in the Philadelphia area?
I mean, I would like to. I really liked it last year. I mean, I went the past 2 years, but this year was it was just even bigger, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's gonna be really neat. Like, I think this coming year is gonna be very interesting for us with the channel.
It may have like a bit of an audience behind you too.
Yeah, I mean, like even since,
I mean, we've grown 400%. Since MAGFest last year.
Yeah.
Which was 1 year ago this coming weekend.
Yeah.
I know that because...
Year ago this coming week, yeah.
Yeah. I know that because my son was born.
You'll...
next Sunday. I mean, we're going to be getting back really early.
Yeah. I was almost thinking it's a shame that we're going to be doing like a debrief episode.
But we don't, we have really nothing to debrief in terms of the
episode.
Right,
that's true. It's not going to be a lot. Like, I was just going to play like something on the Famicom.
Yeah, I mean,
it can be whatever.
Oh, right, that's right.
It can be whatever. So we can just talk and discuss. We're probably going to be tired because our flights are early.
It's like at 6 a.m. Yeah. I had to leave really early because it's my son's birthday, and I wanted to get back as early as I could.
Oh, so. I think like the next latest was like more expensive or something, right?
Right. But, yep. So we'll see you on Friday with a new episode, and on Sunday we'll probably be really tired. Hopefully we're feeling fine.
If you're going to G Anime, we'll see you there.
Yeah. If you see us walking around. We don't have a table or anything, but if you see us walking around,
yeah,
say hello. All right. Good night, everybody.
Awesome.
Good night.
Enjoy, folks. See you later, guys.
Later.